is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, Republicans have been in control of Congress for one day, and already they've come up with 16 ways to Sunday to screw average Americans, working class Americans, poor people, and there's a huge I told you so about dynamic scoring that I got to share with you. First, just a quick note, and kind of a cautionary note, too. Those people who are watching this program on Free Speech TV, on Dish or Direct, or on cable systems around the country, you probably noticed I am wearing sunglasses, basically. I've got these little sunglass things that fit inside my normal glasses. And the reason why is because I just came from the eye doctor, and they dilated my eyes, and the lights in the studio are so bright that they hurt. And, you know, with your eyes, if you've ever been through that, you know what I'm talking about. And I think I mentioned this back 2 months ago when it first started happening. I was getting basically going blind, you know, getting migraines that were knocking out my vision. And then I started noticing that if at night when it was dark, if I moved my head really fast, I would see sparkles. And, you know, my good friend Ellen Ratner, who's on this program a lot, you know, she runs the Talk Radio News Service. She had the same thing happen to her in her right eye, as I recall. And she was in Africa when it happened. And by the time she got back to the United States, her retina had detached and she is blind in that eye. And she's a real, evangelist about this stuff, about, you know, retinal detachment and catching retinal problems. In fact, she ran for talk radio hosts at one of the talkers meetings a couple of years ago. She brought in eye doctors and they did free eye screening for everybody. And they identified like three or four people who had eye disease. So anyhow, Ellen had warned me, if you ever see sparkles in your eyes, go see an ophthalmologist. So I went to see the ophthalmologist today. He said, I'm fine. He said, here's what happens, though, and this is why I'm not just sharing this with you to explain for confused people on TV why I look like a hipster, but also just, you know, anybody in general. He said, what happens is that the, I don't remember if it's aqueous humor or vitreous humor. I think it's the vitreous, whichever it is, the liquid inside your eyeball, behind the lens. The backside of that liquid is where the retina is on the back of the eyeball. And what happens is as people age, and I'm in my 60s, and so bingo, I'm, you know, this is the beginning. As people age, that fluid dries out. Now, there are things that can make it worse, living in northern or dry environments, flying a lot. I mean, when this happened to Ellen, she was on airplanes for hours and hours and hours. It's very dry on airplanes. Drinking a lot of alcohol dehydrates you. Drinking a lot of coffee dehydrates you. And but there's also just age. So what happens is that liquid that when you were a little kid was like nice and liquidy gets more and more like jelly and loses its mass. It shrinks because it's drying out basically. And as it shrinks, it pulls the retina away from the back of the eyeball with it, and it will cause a retina to detach. And this is a fairly common problem for people in their 50s, 60s, and older. And, you know, thankfully it's not a problem I'm suffering from. I thought I might be, but I'm not. But I just wanted to share that with you because, you know, like Ellen Ratner would say, you know, it's like, you ever see sparkles in your eyes, get to see an ophthalmologist. That's an MD eye doctor right away. So back to the Republicans. These cretins, I mean, this is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. Dynamic scoring. You'll remember last week, as I recall, on this program, I opened this show by saying, I want to talk about something that sounds totally nerdy, totally geeky. Nobody knows what it's talking about. It sounds totally boring. People are going to say, come on, Tom, you're being paranoid. There's no way they would ever do that. Even Republicans aren't that stupid. And I said, but I predict that one of the first things Republicans are going to bring up is something called dynamic scoring. Dynamic scoring is a fancy, academic-sounding, economist-sounding phrase that one of these guys, Lafler, or one of these trickle-down supply-side people pulled out of their backside and said, hey, here's a fancy way of doing this. So, and basically what it is normally, if you cut taxes by you know, $100 billion. In other words, you're going to reduce the income to the government by $100 billion from rich people. Then you've got $100 billion less in your budget. Right? That's normal budgeting. Right? If your income goes down, you have less money. But according to Republican theology, and it's a theology, it's a religion, it is not, there is, not only is there no science behind this, this was a theory when Alvin Lafler and these guys, you know, pitched it to Ronald Reagan. It was a theory, they tried it, and it didn't work. It's been disproven. We have, you know, 34 years of Reaganomics. We know this is a lie. And the lie was, if you cut taxes on rich people, it'll actually increase your tax revenue, because those rich people will then take that money and they'll use it to build factories and hire more people and stimulate the economy, and wonderful stuff will happen. And what everybody said back in 1980 when this was being pitched, and Reagan was pitching this, and even in the primaries, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was running against Reagan in the primaries, called it voodoo economics, said it was stupid and crazy, or words to that effect. But, you know, from that day throughout the Reagan administration, they did this thing called dynamic scoring, where they said, okay, we're going to lose $100 billion in tax revenue, but that means the rich people are going to stimulate our economy so much, we're actually going to make an extra $10 billion. So this tax cut is going to produce increased revenue for the government. It's literally voodoo economics. And they use this phrase, dynamic scoring. Well, the House rules, first day of the legislation of the legislature. We should get Peter DeFazio on to talk about this. He understands this stuff really well. He could probably explain it better than me. But in any case, they established the rules by which they are going to interact with the Congressional Budget Office. And in the rules for the House, they said, we are going to go for dynamic scoring. I don't have the exact language, and I couldn't read it right now anyway because my eyes are so dilated that I can't read. But, all right, you know, it's very, very hard. But they did it. They did it. It's right there. And you are going to, I swear that you are going to see budget bills with dynamic scoring built into them. In other words, Reaganomics is back. Then the second thing they did is they put a rule in that says that you can't move money around inside the Social Security accounts or even out of the general fund for Social Security to cover shortfalls. And there may be shortfalls in Social Security disability insurance this year. There typically are, and they just kind of move it out of the general fund into the SSDI fund. That you can't do that. Now, again, this sounds academic and wonky, and it's not sexy stuff that's going to make the evening news. But what it means is that Congress cannot pass laws or appropriations or anything for the next 2 years that will strengthen or increase Social Security. Can't do it. You can only pass laws or policies that will cut Social Security. The Republicans passed that yesterday. Did you see that on the evening news last night? I mean, this is astonishing what these guys have already done. Their food stamps, the SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. SNAP is a food stamp program. This program is supposed to run out at the end of next year. The Republicans are saying, cool. Really? And these laws that were enacted in 1996, they were time limited. And we're operating basically food stamps under an emergency. I mean, the economy's in a crisis. It still is. It's not obviously for the top 5 or 10%, but it is for everybody else. And the Republicans are going to take a whack at food stamps, too. I mean, it's so already they've gone after Social Security, the tax code, and food stamps in less than 24 hours.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, you know, I told you so. What can I say? It's going to get worse. It's going to get weirder. Stick around. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I can just barely see where to go. Mouse. Ah, there's my mouse. It's tough doing a show wearing sunglasses. Hey, Corky in Rochester, New York. How you doing, Corky? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Good, Tom. How you doing?
I'm fine, and I'm relieved. Back in December when I was having this eye problem, my doctor was calling around finding an ophthalmologist who would see me, and I was like, you know, nobody was taking new patients. I had to wait a month. But now I got, you know, the news is all's good. So I'm great, which is probably more than you meant to ask, Corky. I think you were just being polite. But what's up?
Yeah.
Corky, you're on the air.
Okay, well, I want to talk about what you were talking about, dynamic scoring.
Yeah.
What you're doing is you're taking the people and you're making their life even harder.
Yes.
You're going to make it even more financially insecure. Now, this is what I don't understand about the Republicans, why they are so dynamically stupid. You make it easy for people to get guns.
Yeah.
You don't want no gun restrictions. You want no limits on magazines. You want nothing. And you want to take people who are already struggling and push them up against the wall even further. Do you realize what's going to happen? A human being is nothing more than an animal. But what makes us different is our compassion for others and our intelligence. But when you reduce a human being to an animal trying to survive, they're coming out of the cage with the gun.
Yeah.
You're going to create more havoc and disruption in this country than you've ever seen before.
You're right.
You think these shootings are just starting, or are the ending, or in the middle? You're wrong. They're just beginning.
Well, if the Republicans continue to drag down the economy, I absolutely agree with you, Corky. And in fact, there's a huge body of statistical evidence that backs that up. Richard Wilkins and Kate Pickett wrote two books about it. One was called Why Inequality Matters, and the other is called The Spirit Level. And they've got a great website. And what they found is that the more unequal society gets, and it's not just the poor getting poorer, it's the rich getting richer. The more unequal a society gets, the more violent it becomes. Very simple.
Yeah, the human being is the only animal on the planet who kills for revenge.
I'm not sure that's true, but
you can lay down in a field of lions. As long as their bellies are full and you're not messing with their women, they won't bother you. But when they get hungry and you back them up against the wall, you're dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I equate a human being to. The difference that separates us from the animals is our compassion and our intellect. But you take away my compassion, my intellect don't pay the bills or put food on the table.
Yeah.
You've got a dangerous animal in your hands.
Mm-hmm. What you're describing, Corky, is a variation on Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of human needs. Back in 1976, he came up with this thing. I'll riff on this when we come back. Corky, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, as always. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Steny Hoyer objects, and tip of the hat to Sue in the chat room who passed along this link. House Majority Whip Steny Hoyer is objecting to a series of rules that will govern the 114th House of Representatives. Particularly, he fears language that would permit the expansion of dynamic scoring, a method used to analyze policy changes. Right? Isn't that great language? Right. Dynamic scoring predicts the impact of fiscal policy changes by forecasting the effects of economic agents, reactions to incentives created by policy. To Hoyer, this would allow tax cuts with a promise of future, but uncertain, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, he says this is not a good sign for the year to come. Talking to reporters today, he is concerned that dynamic scoring will seek to politicize the Congressional Budget Office. He is absolutely right. Now, they are referring to these as proposed rules. This is a story from yesterday, though. This is January 6th. I think the rules passed. Oops. Uh-oh. Losing my sunglasses here. I think the rules passed. So we'll see where this goes. Corky just a minute ago made the point. By the way, Jim Javinsky, our video guy, he said we should call it dynamic screwing rather than dynamic scoring, because it's screwing the average American, and it's helping out the Koch brothers. I mean, it's going to help out the billionaires. Billionaires are going to dynamic scoring is wonderful for them. It justifies more tax cuts for rich people and big corporations. But, you know, with the justification that, oh, it'll reduce the deficit. Keep in mind, when Reagan tried this, it tripled our national debt. It was the fastest increase in the national debt outside of wartime in the history of the United States, all the way back to the George Washington administration. That's how badly it worked. And the Republicans introduced it yesterday, as I predicted a week ago, when nobody even knew what dynamic scoring was. And I said, just keep, you know, I know how these guys think. It's not a secret. They're right up front. What astonishes me is that, by and large, the American people, because the American media won't say it, don't realize that the agenda of the Republican Party is very simple and straightforward. It's more money for the rich, less benefits for the poor. The quote, less government or smaller government is merely a catchphrase that means no social safety net. The Republican mantra is to hell with unemployment benefits. And I don't understand why the Democrats didn't run on this last November, you know, 2 months ago. The Republicans have been holding hostage for 14 months now an extension of long-term unemployment benefits. That, to me, is one hell of a big deal. But the media refuses to talk about it. I know that Bernie Sanders, Peter DeFazio, Keith Ellison, there's a number of good members of Congress who have spoken out and spoken out loudly about how the Republicans were holding unemployment benefits hostage. It never gets reported in the media. We have a corporate media that serves corporate interests, period. I mean, it's very simple. And the right-wing message is that media's, I mean, that's their song. And you say, well, wait a minute. I thought right-wingers were like, you know, they didn't like, you know, brown people coming in from Mexico and stuff like that. Yeah, of course. They use race, or they don't like gay people. Yes, they use race. They use homophobia. They use these things to bring along the low-information voters, the rural Louisiana voters, the people, the red state voters, the people who basically they get their information from Fox so-called news, which is about half the time wrong on their facts, according to MediaMatters.org. But what astonishes me is most people don't realize that the entire Republican agenda. Too much regulation. What does that mean? It means that companies that pollute, like Koch Industries, should be allowed to pollute more, or shouldn't be penalized when they do pollute. I mean, you know, Koch Industries was hit with 97 criminal charges sometime back from the EPA, if my recollection is correct, and apparently they're still stinging about it because the Koch brothers have announced that they want to change the criminal code in the United States. Well, I think that might have something to do with Koch Industries having been charged as a criminal. And they say, and we're going to throw some money to the NAACP here, or one of the ACLU. I forget which group they gave some money to. They said, you know, here's some money to help. You know, we're going to try and do something about drug sentencing. That is, in magic tricks, it's like watch my right hand while my left hand actually does the trick. Right. The left hand is flipping the lever that's going to put the rabbit in the hat. The right hand is what the audience is looking at because it's waving around. You know, what they're doing is they're waving around their right hand saying, hey, look at this. We're going to give some money to sentencing guidelines for drug, you know, and do away with the, you know, it's good stuff. We all agree on it. But the real reason that they're going down that road is because we want to change the criminal code so that polluters don't go to jail or banksters don't go to jail or whatever. And it's not just the Koch brothers. I mean, this is just right across the whole Republican spectrum. The Republican Party is about rich people and big corporations, period. End of sentence. And the continuous rants that you hear out of Hannity and Limbaugh and Fox so-called news and all, you know, and all these right-wing sites about how Obama's a secret communist and a socialist and Obamacare is tyranny and blah de blah de blah de blah de blah. Yeah, add it all up. You can boil it all down to a really, really simple agenda. If it serves the interests of the rich, from their point of view, it's good. If it serves the interests of working class people in the United States, from their point of view, that's bribery. Right? That's politicians pandering to the voters. That's politicians buying votes. That was the charge against FDR in 1935 when he passed Social Security, that he was buying the votes of old people. He cut poverty in the United States in half among elderly people by passing Social Security. And then LBJ cut it further with the Great Society dramatically. I mean, LBJ cut poverty in half in 6 years with the Great Society. And in both cases, the Republicans said, oh, you're just trying to buy the votes of average working people. Well, of course, you represent them. They want this. You do it. But the Republicans are also trying to buy votes. Only the votes that they're trying to buy aren't just votes. They're also trying to buy money with their legislation. In other words, they pass dynamic scoring. And what happens? All the rich people who are going to see their taxes go down, they write checks to Republican candidates and to the Republican Party. Anyhow, your call's up next. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
When is the media in the United States going to start calling these guys out? I mean, Bernie's doing it. Steny Hoyer's doing it. It's not getting covered, though. The hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fair and only slightly unbalanced and sort of blind. That too shall pass. I guess the eye drops last about 3 hours. So, and I got them about an hour and a half ago. So I got a little time to go here. Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, how you doing?
Happy New Year to you, Tom.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you too, my friend. What's on your mind?
Yeah, the president, he just did a report about what happened in Paris. But I think it was Paris in France.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is what, I want to ask you something, and then I want to talk about the Republicans. First of all, okay, you said that they passed this legislation yesterday, right?
Yeah. And in fact, I during the break, Shane printed out a copy of the actual rules that were passed and gave them to me. So, yeah, it apparently did pass yesterday. And
okay,
actually,
I want to ask you is.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Wayne.
Oh, what I want to ask you is, okay, since they passed that, doesn't it go to the Senate? Don't they have anything to do with it?
No. Each body, and this is in the Constitution, each body, the House and the Senate, must operate under their own rules. They define the rules under which they operate. And these were the rules that the House passed yesterday. And for the House. And all spending legislation, all tax legislation has to originate in the House of Representatives. And that's why this is such a big deal, because the Senate does not originate spending measures. They can only vote on them.
So the Senate has no say in what they did with what the House did yesterday.
That's correct.
Okay, this is what I want to talk about real quick, Tom.
Yeah.
Just like Corky said, you know, the Republicans attack the people who are the most vulnerable. Listen to this. Okay, they're going to cut off 1 million people for the next 10 years from food stamps.
Right.
These are the areas in the country with the highest unemployment. The average income is 22% of the poverty line, Tom, $2,500 and under. All single people 18 to 50 years old. They will deny basic food assistance to people who are looking for employment and are ready to do any job or participate in any work program.
Right.
And also people who live in states who offer few or no employment programs for them. And no job training programs. So they want to attack the people who are the most vulnerable, who need it the most. But I have the answer of what's wrong with them, Tom. You want to know what it is?
What's that?
I was looking at, I went to the Republican National Committee last night. They got nothing but pentagrams on all of their stuff.
Oh, yeah. So, they flipped the flag, the stars upside down on their logo.
Right. That's what's wrong with them.
You think they've been demonically possessed?
Yes.
Whoa.
I'm telling you flat out.
Whoa.
They're operating from people behind the scenes who worship the dark forces. That's what's wrong with them, and I hang up.
Okay, Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. That's, you know, I've been asking that question. Why is it that back in 2000, when George Bush was running for president, the Republican Party changed their logo to flip the stars upside down on their logo, so it's the satanic star rather than the American flag star, the five-pointed star upside down. So it's an international distress signal, or it's a sign of Satan worshiping. And the Republicans are still using this as their logo. I mean, half the time they flip it right side up on television. You wouldn't know to watch a lot of the networks. But if you look at the Republican website, it's upside down. By the way, Wayne mentioned Paris, and I want to get to that, and then I'll pick up the rest of your calls here. And by the way, just FYI, every single line is full right now, and we're having a weird situation. We have been for a couple of months with our phone provider, with our phone company, where, say what? Oh, it's fixed? Oh, great. Oh, okay, cool. I was going to say, people were getting error messages instead of busy signals, but apparently we fixed it. Cool. Back to Paris. When Muslims kill white people, by and large, we call it terrorism. Why is nobody calling David Duke a terrorist? I mean, not that he has specifically killed anybody, but he represents the KKK, which is one of the oldest and most, frankly, most efficient and effective terrorist organizations in the history of the United States. Why do we not refer to the KKK as a terrorist organization? Why don't we refer to the guy who killed the guard at the Jewish Museum here, or at the Holocaust Museum rather, a terrorist? Here's an amazing thing. There was a commentator, and I'm forgetting his name, and I can't read, so I don't have the printout in front of me. I'm going to do a daily take about this on TV tonight. But there was a commentator who was on TV, and they were talking about this murder in Paris today of, I think it was 13 people at this magazine that is kind of the mad magazine of France, right? It's a satire magazine, a newspaper. And the guy said, this is the second worst terrorist incident. This is the worst terrorist incident since the bombing of the London subway. Really? What happened to Anders Breivik? Has everybody forgotten that a white guy in Norway murdered a whole bunch of little kids at a left-wing socialist summer camp? It was a much bigger terrorist incident in terms of deaths and in terms of just the horror of what was done than either the London tube bombing or the Paris thing. But nobody considers that terrorism because, hey, it's a white guy doing the shooting. Why is Eric Rudolph not called a terrorist? Why is he called a murderer? The guy, you know, who is murdering abortion doctors and blowing up clinics. Why is it that when white people commit these kinds of crimes, we call them deranged killers, and when people with brown skin or who are of the Muslim religion commit these kind of crimes, we call them terrorism? And this is not just unique to the Republican Party, this kind of language. I mean, you will find this in our media. Anyhow, end of rant. Cliff, I mean, I asked the question rhetorically. The answer to the question is that our media is largely white and historically has been of, by, and for the white community. And so that's the point of view that's being reflected there. It's slowly changing. It's becoming more diverse. People are waking up, but that's the situation. Cliff, in Claremore, Oklahoma. If I'm reading that right, I can barely see it. What's up, Cliff?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, happy New Year's Eve, first of all.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hope you luck on your rise.
Oh, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.
Okay. Great.
Something everybody should do at least once, you know, every couple of years.
That's true. The thing is one of the reasons why I'm calling is because what you had just mentioned. It seems like what the Republican Party is doing is very un-American, and maybe we need to have our own House of Un-American Activities committee and actually open up investigations on the un-American ways of the Republican Party simply by virtue of the fact that everything that my dad, your dad, and every generation preceding them have worked hard for seems to be going to dust right now.
Yeah, I agree. My dad was a conservative Republican, and he supported Social Security. He supported unionization. He supported, I mean, you know, that was what a conservative Republican did in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. They were reasonable people. They, you know,
I used to think that way about conservative Republicans myself when I was in high school. I used to think maybe they were the party of the level-headed, more mature type people. And one of the things I wanted to mention yesterday was that it seems to me like the conservatives are acting more juvenile in most cases than they
are. Oh, yeah. And did you see where Boehner just kicked of the 25 guys who voted against him for speaker? Two of them were committee chairs, and he just kicked them out of their or committee, you know, had nice seats on fancy, important committees, and he kicked them off. He's punishing the people who challenged him. It's like schoolyard bully politics. It's amazing.
Well, the thing that concerns me is in the next 10 or 20 years, I'm afraid that if the conservatives have it their way, we're going to start seeing purges happening, similar to what happened in Iran during the Shah and
Germany in the mid-30s.
The others. I mean, that is one of the things that's really concerning me. And I'd like to have some conservative get on the phone and then try to argue against what I'm saying to you or a lot of people like myself and yourself, for that matter, terms of trying to make sure that they know what the hell is going on.
I'm with you, Cliff. Here's the other thing. The way that the Democrats could do this and should do this is they should create a shadow cabinet, a shadow government, and call it that. Maybe shadow is the wrong word here. People don't get it. But, you know, in many European countries and I believe in Israel and other countries where they have parliamentary systems, the party that is out of power still appoints their own Secretary of the Treasury, their own, you know, whatever. They behave as if they were a government in power and propose legislation. It never goes anywhere. But what it does is it causes the general public to know exactly where they stand. And, you know, that would be a good thing for the Democratic Party, by and large, with the exception of, well, we'll see. I think TPP is, they're going to get a revolt from the Democratic Party themselves on that, too. Cliff, thanks for the call. I'm with you. And this is, it's time for people of good conscience to stand up and speak out. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And in fact, I would argue that there has been a shadow right-wing government, and it exists on Fox News. There is no shadow left-wing government that I know of in the United States. And welcome back. Don in Nashua, New Hampshire. Hey, Don, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too. I love your New Hampshire accent.
That's your... Pardon me?
I said, I love your New Hampshire accent. I used to live up there. I know, in Merrimack. Yeah.
And I'm glad that your eye problem is...
Is not a problem.
Not a tragedy.
Yeah, thank you. Me too.
Listen, the reason why I was calling is you are, sir, the first one that has talked about, well, and I love the way that you put it, the dynamic screwing.
Yeah. Thanks to Jim Jovinsky for that. Yeah.
I had tweeted out back in, I believe it was like in mid-November, about a story in Salon about this, how Paul Ryan wanted to blow this all up.
Oh, really?
CBO. Yeah. And I believe I tweeted you. I tweeted the Bill Press Show and everybody pretty much on free speech.
Yeah.
But you are the first one that is talking about it, and it needs to be talked about because, truthfully, the GOP's motto right now is, if you're not rich, we're going to make you a bitch.
Yeah, as much as I don't like the B word, that's their slogan. I would not disagree.
Because all they want to do is just wipe out the middle class and just keep all the money for themselves.
Yep.
All these people that worked for years, all their pensions are going down the drain.
Yeah, it's the equivalent.
To wipe out every social program that's out there to help the needy.
They're doing to working people the equivalent of the old keep them dumb, barefoot, and pregnant in the kitchen thing about, you know, that how men used to talk about women.
or at least misogynist men used to talk about women. And that's how the Republican Party is treating the entire working class of America.
Yeah, but it all goes back to, you said, Reagan.
Yeah.
That's where it started. But it just amazes me how this country is so asleep and has not figured it out that this does not work.
Yeah.
But yet they keep putting these people in office.
Yep. It's Einstein's definition of insanity. Insanity is when you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Totally with you, Don. Don, thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for your kind words. Happy New Year to you. Anita in San Antonio. Hey, Anita, we got a minute. Is it a quick one, please?
Tom, you know, what makes me so angry is this narrative we're hearing from the media about how we're going to have to compromise with Republicans because, of course, they have to get something done. The problem is when we compromise, children go to bed hungry. When we compromise, senior citizens don't have heat. We compromise, people lose their retirement. What do they compromise? How do they compromise?
Right. When they compromise, rich people might pay a little bit more in taxes. I mean, that was the big thing, 5 years ago when Republicans controlled the House and the Senate and they did away with the Bush tax cuts.
Well, yeah, and the people that have to pay a little bit more in taxes are the people that can afford to pay more in taxes.
Of course.
They should be paying more in taxes.
Of course. Of course. Absolutely. I mean, we need to not just get rid of the Bush tax cuts, which we about halfway did. We need to get rid of the Reagan tax cuts. We need to go back to a 74% top tax rate. Anita, thank you for the call. Very, very, very well said. Thank you. We'll be right back. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, your media support group for We the People. Richard, driving through Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I wanted to talk about this Keystone XL thing. Yesterday, Josh Earnest was at a press conference where he was asked about the Keystone XL pipeline.
Right.
Apparently, the Republicans have already introduced legislation to try and push this thing through.
Right, and Obama has said he will veto it.
Right, and he already came out and said it probably won't see the light of day. Already this morning, I believe it was Boehner, has already come out and said that this is a bad way for Obama to start with the new Congress because it shows that he's not trying to work with them.
Right.
And in my mind, I don't understand why it is that this meeting at the Caucus Room restaurant that they had 6 years ago, where there's audio of people that were there admitting to what they did, what they said, what they agreed to, is not being plastered all over the airways by the Democrats to say, look, you know, Boehner is accusing us of not wanting to work with them, but they swore not to work with us.
Right, right. And they didn't for 6 years. And they're continuing not to. And you know, the thing about John Boehner that's so amazing, and I think that this is one of the pieces of why he's a successful speaker, is because he sounds like a reasonable person, right? When he talks, he sounds like he's had a couple of drinks, which he most likely has. Apparently, he starts drinking around noon. And you know, he says, oh, I think this is a pretty interesting thing. You know, he sounds like just a reasonable guy. If he had a Jersey accent, and he talked like somebody out of Goodfellas or famous TV show that I never watched where, you know, about the mob family that went on for years. Yeah, The Sopranos. If he talked like somebody out of The Sopranos, then his demeanor and tone and language would be consistent with the kind of behavior that he's engaged in because he's a bully. The guy's a bully.
Well, exactly. And my feeling is, you know, if the Democratic Party would just wake up and start using against the Republicans their own words, the things that they have said.
Yeah.
And I mean, put it out there publicly and just keep beating that drum.
I am absolutely with you, Richard. But the tragedy is you can search the American media for anybody consistently talking about the caucus room conspiracy, and you will find virtually all of it on this program. And I don't know why. I know that other people are aware of it. I've had these conversations on other people's programs. The Republicans, what they do is they find one good thing, one good lever that they can use to beat up the Democrats, Benghazi, Fast and Furious, IRS, and they pound it so hard with this multi-billion-dollar media infrastructure that they have. They pound it so hard that all you have to do is say one word or two words or three words, Fast and Furious, and immediately their entire base, everybody knows what they're talking about. The Democrats have no parallel to that, and it's a tragedy. But in large part, the reason why is because the Democrats have no parallel to the right-wing media machine that the Republican Party has access to, both the insiders and the outsiders. So but I'm with you. Richard, thank you for the call. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Carl, what's on your mind?
Well, this morning I got up, cut the television on, got my kids ready for school, my wife was already done. Cut on the television around 6:25, and I seen the Paris thing, what happened there, the terrorist attack.
Right.
Okay, flash forward 2 hours later when I left my house to go to my office. The same damn story was on every news channel.
Right.
Owned by corporate news.
Yeah, I missed that. I spent the morning in a doctor's office.
this is the problem.
Yeah.
We have an incredibly ignorant, unwilling to learn and search anything society here in America.
Yeah.
You didn't talk about the terrorist attack in France until 40 minutes into the show.
Right.
40 minutes into the show, you gave us other news that's going on in the world of politics in America, and other news going on here. 2 hours, man. 2 hours. The people over there, God bless their family.
It's a tragedy, but what does it have to do with me? You know, what does it have to do with the United States? That, you know.
It's news, I understand. And I guarantee you, when I go home today, I turn on any of the corporate news stations, when I leave from my office this afternoon and head on, wait for my kids to get home, I guarantee you, they're still going to have that bright, flashing, breaking news.
Right.
And that's what it's going to
be. And you know
be.
Why, Carl? Because the subtext to that.
I know exactly why. Just what you were talking about with the Republican Party. They get one thing and they bang on it. The American public has been so dumbed down that they cannot hold more than two different thoughts in their mind at the same time. Benghazi, Fast and Furious, you know, the Drill Baby Drill.
Yeah.
This is what America is, and this is the reason why the Republican Party has gotten away with treason. It was absolutely a treasonous act what they did against conspiring against the government. And what happened? 2 years later, they got rewarded with the House, and 4 years later, they get rewarded with the Senate.
Yeah, their conspiracy worked.
It is absolutely incredible. I live here in the South, and I watch these damn people day in and day out, month in and month out, year in year out, vote against their own self interest.
Yep.
I listen to these people, Obama did this and Obamacare that, the same people who are getting food stamps.
Yeah.
These people are getting food stamps.
Right, and who are looking forward.
They are voting Republicans.
Yeah, and looking forward to Social Security and Medicare. And you know, it's like that old Tea Party sign, keep your government hands off my Medicare. Really? But, Carl, the other reason why they're pounding the story of the terrorist attack in Paris is because it feeds that sub meme, which is the principal meme, the principal thought virus of the Republican Party, which is be afraid, be very afraid.
Be very afraid, be afraid. And
that's all they got to sell is fear.
That's all you have to do. If you scare the hell out of middle class and lower income white people, make them afraid of the other. Make them afraid of anything.
Right.
I fear my teenage son's death by the hand of police more than I fear their death by a terrorist attack in America.
Yeah, there you go. Carl, well said. Thank you so much for the call. And we will be right back. Actually, we're going to be back with Bill Keller, Reverend Bill Keller, who is has some opinions about the suicide of a transgendered teen.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Another example of how fundamentalist right-wing Christianity kills. A person who was born as Josh Alcorn, was born as a boy. I don't know at what age, but she changed her name to Leela Alcorn and said, I am a woman. And a transgendered person. And Leela committed suicide on December 28th, just a little more than a week ago. And in her suicide note, she said the reason why she was doing this is that her parents, her family reacted, I'm quoting, reacted extremely negatively, telling me that it was a phase, that I would never truly be a girl, that God doesn't make mistakes, that I am wrong. Her family took her to a Christian therapist who told her, quote, that I was selfish and wrong and that I should look to God for help, end quote. After being isolated by her parents from her peers for 5 months, she began to have suicidal thoughts. The note ends with a plea for her property to be sold and her money to be put to trans, civil rights, and support groups, and for her death to mean something. And hundreds of thousands of people are reacting to this. Apparently her death is meaning something, although when they asked her mother about it, on CNN, her mother refused to refer to her as her. She referred to her as him. She said, we don't support that religiously. They asked, you know, why can't you accept this quote, lifestyle of becoming transgendered? And her mother said, we don't support that religiously. We told him that we loved him unconditionally. Right. Reverend Bill Keller is on the line with us. And let me get my one sheet here and get it right. Founder of Live Prayer, liveprayer.com. Bill, welcome back.
Tom, Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
Thank you, and to you too, Bill. I'm just astonished that anybody would view this as anything other than a tragedy that's the consequence of intolerance.
Actually, it's a tragedy that's the consequence of what I said 10 years ago was going to start happening when perversion was pushed on society by a less than 2% of our population. You've got a 16-year-old kid that has no more understanding of sexuality than brain surgery, but he's been brainwashed probably since he was a child by the media, by the people that promote this sinful lifestyle. Listen, there's no such thing. Let me just say up front, there's no such thing as a transgender person. You're either born a male or a female. And you can do whatever you want to change your gender, but it doesn't change it. Just like two men getting married still doesn't mean marriage, because marriage is a man and a woman.
Yeah. So you're basing this on the Bible, right, Bill?
Well, not only just on the Bible, but I'm basing this on reality. When God made a man, he made a man. When he made a woman, he made a woman. Now, you can go, in your confusion, you can call yourself a girl. But see, this is what really troubles me, Tom. It should trouble you and your listeners too. You've got children now that are being promoted this perversion. Like I said, this 16-year-old boy
had language
no more clue of his gender identity.
Bill, do you have any idea how brutal that language is? There are, and this is not just some passing fad or something. This has happened throughout history. There are, and in fact, Paul wrote about this in the Bible. He said some men are born eunuchs and some choose to become eunuchs. There, throughout history, we have had people who were born in the wrong body, and they know it. And now we have the technology where people can change that. And guys like you are saying that people who do this are perverts, and that, which is a horrible slur. You
no,
are, this
perverts.
Kind of rhetoric
Tom,
coming
Tom,
out of your
Tom,
mouth, Bill, is
Tom,
the reason why the number one suicide rate, let me finish this damn sentence. The
all
number
right.
one suicide rate in the United States right now is among gay teenagers.
Yeah.
And
yep.
it's because of people
yep.
like you saying the things that you just said.
No, you know what it's because of people like Rosie O'Donnell, Ellen DeGeneres, Rick Maddow, all these media personalities that cheerlead and support this perversion that confuse these kids. That's who's to blame. That's who's to blame.
I don't get it, Bill. I don't get it.
You don't get it? Listen,
no, I don't
Tom,
get
it's
why.
Simple.
I don't get why you
10
care.
10 years ago, I
why,
predicted
why do you
this
care about this?
Tom, 10 years
ago. Why do you ago, care?
Because you've got children, their heads are being filled with lies at a young age when they don't even have a clue about their sexuality. They're being fed these lies. No, you're really a girl. You're really a boy. I mean, the confusion, that's what killed this kid. The confusion that the media has fed him since birth, that he's something other than who God created him. That's who killed this child.
Bill,
it's tragic.
It seems to me that men who sit around all day worrying about the other people's sexuality are probably struggling with their own.
No, that's a nice one, Tom. You know, I hear that every time. No, this is about society. Do you not see the breakdown of marriage and the family as the foundation of society that is the reason for the social ills we're dealing with?
And what's happening
and
right now in the gay community?
People
are getting married. If you want to be pro-marriage, you should be celebrating the fact that people can be who they are, who they were born, and get married.
Well, Tom, let me share this with you. Somebody you probably agree with, the head of GLAAD, said that people should be able to love who they want to, and nobody should be able to tell them any different. So does that mean if I love 3 men and 5 women and maybe a horse, I should be able to have 3 men, 5 women, and a horse as my partners? Is that what you're saying?
Bill, that's like my asking you
who are you to tell me who I can love?
If you think that the Christian religion is a wonderful thing, then you must also endorse Satan worshiping, right? Because actually, it's a religion. You're a pro-religion guy. You must be in favor of Satan worshiping, right?
I'm not in favor of it, but I support people who want to worship that way. I absolutely do. I'm not a hypocrite. Listen,
okay.
the problem is they've got to promote this as anything but what it is, a choice. You're born black, you're born white. Taking your pants off to have sex is a choice, and because they can't go there, they've got to open this door. Now you've got all this other perversion entering,
Bill,
which is what we're seeing play out.
You've got the American Psychological Association saying that you're wrong and the kind of language you're using causes suicides among teenagers. You've got the American Psychiatric Association saying you're wrong and the kind of language you're using causes suicides among teenagers.
Rachel Maddow, Anderson Cooper, the media personalities that pushed this and promote this perversion, they're the ones who are causing the suicides, Tom, not people like me.
So
we're actually the ones that are helping
confusion. How is being out about being gay, acknowledging who you are, as Anderson Cooper and Rachel Maddow have done, is that in any way promoting anything? If I say, hey, I've been married for 43 years, am I running around saying to other people, you must be married to a woman just like I am? That's crazy, Bill.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Because what they're doing is they're promoting this perverted lifestyle that less than 2% of the population engages in, and they're promoting it as normal.
Why do you care about that 2%? Leave them alone,
listen,
Bill.
Pardon me?
Leave them alone. Why do you care about that 2%?
Because children like Josh Alcorn, a young boy, are having their heads filled with this nonsense at an age they don't even understand it. And then they're throwing themselves in front of trucks because society has got them so confused and so twisted. And then to add insult to injury, they blame their poor parents because they actually love their child and want their child to be free from this kind of perversion and bondage.
This is the kind of language, Bill, that destroys lives.
No, this is the kind of language
I hope you
that
look
saves
deep into
lives.
Your soul.
It's the kind of acceptance that you promote, Tom, that's helping promote this lie to kids.
Accepting people who are different. You
it's
don't,
not accepting
you will
people
not
are
accept
different.
People who are
Listen,
different.
If you're
from
21
you.
Years old and you want to and you want to engage in unhealthy, unnatural sex with whoever, that's fine. But to promote this to children, which has been done as a very strategic plot for the last 20 years.
Bill, this is not a plot. This is
it.
This
sure
is,
it is.
This is reality. It's what the
no,
American Psychological
reality,
Association
Tom.
Says.
They're, Tom. I'll tell you what. You know what the reality is? Every society in human history, go do your own research, that has embraced this type of perversion ultimately ended up destroying itself very quickly thereafter.
Bill, can you name any society in the history of Earth that hasn't destroyed itself?
Pardon me?
Can you name one society in the history of Earth that has not destroyed itself?
But it hasn't been because of this type of perversion.
There are no empires that are still around.
It hasn't been because of
this. Bill Keller, liveprayer.com. Thank you, Bill.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. I think I'll let that pass without comment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And we've got a couple of topics on the table. But, you know, there's a lot of other things going on out there, too, if you want to talk about. You know, we can talk about what happened in Paris. We could talk about whatever it may be. Robert in Delhi, Louisiana. Hey, Robert, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up?
It's a pleasure, Tom. Happy New Year to you, your staff, and your family.
Thank you, and back at you.
I called about yesterday on the 24 Senate legislators and the one who abstained, the 25 that were against Boehner.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that they could work with the Republicans?
You mean with the Democrats?
I mean, the Democrats,
Yeah. No. I mean, they opposed Boehner because they were to the right of Boehner. So they're not going to collaborate with Democrats who are to the left of Boehner.
And the guy that just called you, you were talking to that minister.
Yeah.
I just looked at him and you had his picture. I saw no love of Jesus in his face.
Well, I can't.
When people love Jesus, you can see the calmness in them, you know?
Yeah, I can't speak to that. And besides that, I couldn't see him because I can't see anything right now. But you know, I don't want to personalize this, Robert.
I've accepted it, and I feel it. I'm calm and loving towards other people.
Yeah.
And I lose my cool too, and do stupid stuff. But I try to get back to that center point of. The two commandments he gave, forget the 10, there's only two.
Right.
Love the Lord and love your neighbor. Loving your neighbor means accepting them as who they are.
I agree.
And trying to help them.
I agree. Love your neighbor as yourself, in fact, was the, yeah, I'm with you. Robert, thank you for the call. You've encapsulated the essence of Christianity. In fact, Jesus said these are the top two commandments. You're right. Thank you. John in Roseville, Michigan. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I was going to talk to you about what you had with your eye.
Okay.
Yeah, you had the twinkles in one eye?
No, if I push on my left eye, they pop out more readily than on my right eye, but yeah.
Okay.
But I get it in both eyes if I press them really hard.
Yeah, well, I had something like that happen to me when I was in my 40s, and I was driving when it happened, and I found out what it was called. It was called a cluster headache.
Yeah, I know what that is, and that's not what I'm having.
But it was right back in my eyes.
Right, right.
And they told me I was right on the verge of having a stroke.
Yeah, cluster headaches are typically the consequence, I believe. I'm not a physician, but I believe that they're the consequence of blood vessels dilating and pushing on brain tissue and causing, you know, that response. And that if it's an aneurysm, if it's a thinning of the wall of the blood vessel, it could pop and lead to a stroke. What, did you get a stent in there?
I had a coworker who also had a detached retina. All he did was hit a bump in the foot.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get? How did you deal with your cluster headaches? Did you get a stent in the arteries in your brain?
No. I actually made it home. I popped a handful of ibuprofens in my thing, and I laid down.
Yeah.
And I was feeling great.
And it just went away, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I wonder what provoked it. That's very interesting. John, thanks a lot for the call. You know, once again, if you see sparkles that aren't there, go to see an eye doctor. We'll be right back. The hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Hey, just a quick heads up. My book, The Crash of 2016, which I think is getting more and more prescient every day, is just out in paperback. So Hachette has just rolled that out, or 12, their imprint. And a novel that I wrote. I actually wrote the first draft of it back almost 15 years ago. But I think it's relevant today, too. It has to do ultimately with genetically modified organisms. But it's a detective novel, a murder mystery. And it's called Death in the Pines. And it's the fourth or fifth in a series that I wrote about this one character, Oakley Tyler, this private detective character who in the start of the series lived in Atlanta, because I lived in Atlanta at the time I started writing these books. The last one, this one that is in print right now, Death in the Pines, which just came out this week, I guess, in bookstores near you, takes place in Vermont, which is where I was living when I wrote it. We moved to Vermont from Georgia. So just a quick heads up on that. And we will have Dan Sisson, the third book that I've got out in this like 4-month period here, The American Revolution of 1800, which Dan was the principal writer for and I was more of an editor for. Dan is a historian, and he's going to be with us in the next hour. Yeah, an hour from now, or about 40 minutes from now, to talk about that. I have a TV monitor here in the studio just in case, you know, something happens in the world. I can look up and see what's going on. I got CNN in mine. Shano has got one in his room, which adjoins mine, Shano and Jim, where they're running the audio and video boards, and they've got MSNBC on theirs. And we're both watching terror porn, right? It's just terror porn, terrorism pornography. It's just be afraid, be very afraid. The Muslim terrorists are out there. Yeah, right. Whatever happened to news? Why are they not talking? You know, these 13 people being murdered by a crazed guy in Paris. And you can be crazed by religion as by anything else. And I think that point is quite evident right now, given the last 20 minutes. These terrorists in Paris are not going to affect the lives of average Americans anything close to what the Republicans changing the rules in the House of Representatives yesterday to start the process of screwing with Social Security will. That's going to impact all of us eventually. The terror incident in Paris is not going to affect the American people anything close to what cutting a million people off food stamps will in the United States. It's going to devastate families. It's going to provoke suicides. It's going to destroy families. And this, you know, from the Republican Party, which claims they're pro-family, which is just really a euphemism for anti-gay. It's just, the whole thing just is astonishing to me. It's, you know, the state of our media, the state of our country right now, I really think it's going to take, you know, a good splash of cold water in our face. And I think that's going to come as a serious economic shock, which is why I wrote The Crash of 2016 and why in that book, The Crash of 2016, which just came out in paperback. Yeah, it's a naked plug, I guess, for my book. But the reason why, not because I get rich writing books, because ask any author, you don't. In fact, it's a joke how much authors make. But because I think that the book has a really important message in it. It's got, you know, it starts basically with the Powell memo in 1971 and follows the construction of the whole right-wing machine, the juggernaut, up till today, and then how that right-wing machine got in bed with the banksters and devastated the government infrastructure, things like Glass-Steagall, that protected us from another crash. Thus, the crash of 2016 is inevitable. David in San Diego. Hey, David, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I wanted to respond to that, what I would call a far-right religious Old Testament Pharisee you had on, because he's not quoting biblical scripture, but I'd like to tell you right now, right back at that guy. In Hebrews 8:13, it says, by calling this covenant new, he has made the first one obsolete, which would, of course, include Leviticus.
Right.
And what is obsolete and outdated will soon disappear. In James 2:4, it says, have you not been made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? And one of my favorites is in Galatians 3:28. And all your conservative Republicans listening could look this up for once. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Right. I do not understand why conservative Republicans keep quoting the Old Testament when the Bible itself says it's obsolete.
Because the fundamental message of the Old Testament is power and fear, mostly fear of the semi-psychotic God. And the fundamental message of the New Testament is love and acceptance. And so the Republicans are going to hang out of the Old Testament as long as they possibly can, or at least their twisted interpretation of it. Because I would say that, for example, Jews who don't acknowledge the New Testament, you know, modern Judaism is not based on fear and terror and a crazed God. But this right wing fundamentalist Christianity that embraces the Old Testament largely exclusively and rejects love and acceptance in the New Testament, that's what they're all about. And the Republican Party sucks up to them because, hey, fear knows fear, and fear, you know, people who use fear to get their way, the birds of the feather.
And their God is the God of authority and control,
yeah,
rather than love ye one another as
right.
I have loved you.
And Jesus was the exact opposite of that. I mean, he literally gave up his life, right? I mean, for everybody, it's like the opposite. Yeah, very well said. David, thank you for those quotes. And thank you it's nice to hear from a Christian Bible scholar. I appreciate it. Good stuff. 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with the news of the day, my thoughts on it, your thoughts on my thoughts, and all that kind of stuff. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And more Republican hijinks coming up. Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. on a bright, cold day. Wow. The consequences of global warming, I really believe that these polar vortexes and unusual colds are the consequence of the jet stream being messed up by global warming. Congressman Jared Polis of Colorado, Democrat from Colorado, tried to stop dynamic scoring yesterday. He proposed an amendment to the rules under which the House of Representatives runs that says, and I quote, in Rule 8 after subsection A, insert the following new subsection and redesignate subsequent subsections accordingly. It shall not be in order to report a resolution providing for consideration of a measure unless such measure is accompanied by a cost estimate from the Congressional Budget Office. In other words, you can't put forward legislation that involves appropriating money or cutting or changing taxes without the CBO telling us how much it's going to cost. Then the next sentence, such cost estimate shall not incorporate the budgetary effects of changes in macroeconomic variables resulting from such measure. Which is a fancy way of saying you can't do this voodoo dynamic scoring thing saying that macroeconomic variables are going to, you know, you just have to say, hey, if we're cutting $80 million worth or $80 billion worth of taxes from rich people, then we're going to have $80 billion less in our government. Duh. Anyhow, Jared Polis' very common sense amendment to the House rules was rejected yesterday by the House Republicans. We now have dynamic scoring. Doug in Chandler, Arizona. Hey, Doug, what's on your mind? Doug, you are on the air. Or did I just lose Doug? I heard it.
Oh, are you there, Tom?
Hey, yeah, there you go, Doug. What's up?
Hey, the guy that you talked to earlier, I've been well-traveled, lived all over the world, and met a lot of really interesting, nice people. And one person, one individual I met, I became interested in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This individual had both functioning sexual apparatus. Male and female.
A hermaphrodite.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I would like for him to explain that. What did God intend there?
Right, right. This is the whole idea that there is a deity, a Bronze Age deity, who is making individual decisions about each one of us. Well, now we're wandering into debating theology, and I really think that we need to set theology aside and let them debate that in the churches and stuff, and the synagogues and the mosques and temples and whatnot. But that, you know, Doug, you raise a great question, and I had such an anecdote in my life, I would have tossed that at Bill Keller to see what he had to say. Doug, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Michael in Albuquerque, listening on KABQ. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Yeah, I'm actually driving across the country right now from Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment on the guy. I'm a first-time listener. I just turned on the station and heard, I think it was the reverend or pastor say something about, you got people like Ellen DeGeneres and other people of social status
right.
that are kind of the reason why homosexuality, it kind of sounded like he was saying, is the reason why kids think that they're this. And I just wanted to say, just because that really hit a thing, I'm not homosexual at all in any way, but I noticed since the Ellen DeGeneres's, the Lady Gaga's, the everything, there's the suicide rate of kids that don't know how to handle that because nobody really gets it. And they have somebody, the social figure that does get it and telling them that it's okay. It says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that just really hit a thing on me. And like, I've never even called a radio station. And, that just sounds absurd. It just sounded absurd to me. And I just wanted to let people know that.
Okay.
That
those, Michael.
That those social figures are a big deal for people.
Yeah, I agree. It allows young people to accept themselves, whereas before they might have just killed themselves, or they might have lived a miserable, closeted life, like Larry Craig, for example. Michael, excellent point. Thank you very much for calling, and thanks for listening. Gloria in Lumber Bridge, North Carolina, if I'm reading that right. I still can't quite see. Hey, Gloria, what's up?
Well, yes, sir. Tom, I wanted to comment on the homosexuality thing. My oldest daughter is gay,
mm-hmm.
and she told me that she was a boy at the age of 2. So how did she get indoctrinated by the age of 2?
Right.
She started talking this, basically I ignored it, just went on about life until she was older, got older, and it never changed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because nobody was telling her she was gay or she was, this was what she felt at the age of 2.
Yeah.
And I don't see how this gentleman is saying that these children are being indoctrinated and all that. They know in their mind and like saying, not understanding because they, the young man just said about Ellen DeGeneres and that is good for them.
Yes.
Because they are able to grasp it. Better and understand better.
Yeah, I agree. I have, frankly, so much respect for Ellen, for Rachel Maddow, for Anderson Cooper, for the gay people who are out right now. And I have respect for those who have chosen not to be out as well. But the idea that people are trashing people, you're absolutely right, Gloria. I think if you ask the vast majority of people, I mean, there's some people who are probably confused their whole lives and maybe were born confused, but 99 or some very, very high percentage of people can tell you that by the time they were 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years old, they knew whether they were interested in girls or in boys, regardless of their gender. And or if in the case of bisexuals or if they were equally interested in both. And people know that. And they know that long before they're able to be sexual. They know that there are these gender differences and preferences. Gloria, very well said. Thank you for calling and sharing your story with us. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. Hopefully these eye drops will wear off in the next hour. I can take off the sunglasses. What's on your mind?
I feel your pain.
Yeah.
I'm getting up there in age too, Tom.
There you go.
What I wanted to talk about was, we have an all-out war on the middle class, as you can see. We're definitely under the gun with the Republicans, and it looks like they're going to go after unions probably next.
Of course.
They'll probably take some cases to the Supreme Court and try to weaken the unions as much as they can. So we're basically, right now, is we have economic terrorism by the Republican Party, and that's what we're living under right now, is a direct assault on the middle class. And like you always say, Tom, you always say, get involved and don't be a spectator. Just get in there and do something. And I think what we can do is just call our representatives and say we reject the dynamic scoring, we reject the assault on Social Security, and take a stand and start speaking out because we're under attack.
Yeah.
Now's the time to act, Tom.
Yeah. We American principles, American values, and the American people ultimately are under attack by this Congress. I agree. Mark, thank you for the call. Phil in Millville, New Jersey. Hey, Phil, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
I want to ask a question. I called to tell in, though, because I was putting gas in the truck. And you were saying that the Republican passed a bill saying that that they can't add nothing to the Social Security.
Hey, it's not a bill. It was the rules of how the House of Representatives operates. And they modified the rules to say that they can't, if at the end of the year, typically what happens is the end of the year, the amount of money that was budgeted for people on Social Security disability, which is about a third of Social Security, you know, literally widows, orphans, disabled people, people who are, you know, like quadriplegics on ventilators and things, they draw Social Security disability. And that if that fund runs out of money before the end of the year, you can transfer some money out of the main Social Security trust fund into that fund to pay for it. And the rules that they set up said you may not do that. So they didn't pass a law. They passed a rule preventing themselves from passing a law. And what that's going to mean is that when Social Security disability runs short, they're going to cut it.
So now, is there anything that the president can do?
No, no. There's the only thing that we can do is when they try to cut it, raise holy hell. And that day will come. I guarantee you it'll come in the next 2 years, and it'll probably come sometime. The fiscal year for the government is September 1st, October 30th. And so it'll probably come next October, although who knows? It may come before that if SSDI funds, you know, run low and they need to move the money around. It may come before that. But it's this is a setup. I mean, basically what the Republicans did is they changed the rules of the game. They said our team gets six strikes at bat and five balls, and the other team only gets three strikes and four balls. That's it. You know, they changed the rules. They said our side of the football field now is got 70 yards, and the other side of the football field only has 30 yards, and this is how we're going to play the game. They unevened the playing field. And they did it with Social Security. They did it with taxes on rich people and corporations. And, you know, it's just mind-boggling, Phil. And there's, you know, the only thing we can do about it is just raise holy hell and hope that the Democrats can hold it off, particularly the Democrats in the Senate, which is probably where these things will get blocked by filibusters. Phil, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. The place where despair is not an option. Yes, we do have to get active. These are interesting and important times.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be right back. Oh, and did I mention The Crash of 2016? Just out in paperback. And my new book, Death in the Pines, just out in paperback. And welcome back. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Johnny, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I hope you're doing good with your eyesight.
I'll be fine, Johnny. Thank you.
So-called Reverend Bill Keller, when people like him use the word perversion in reference to people who know who they are from a young age in terms of their gender identity, the first thing that comes into mind, or one of the first things that comes to my mind, is when these same hypocrites talk about how pot smoking should be illegal, marijuana is bad, and that's a perversion. And I'm thinking, well, what about alcohol? That's legal, and look at all the heartache it causes. I've responded on First Out Medical through my volunteer fire department for years, and I've never have I ever seen any evidence of pot smoking in a car wreck. It's always been beer bottles or liquor bottles on the scene.
You're a first responder.
And another perversion is a husband who comes home drunk and beats up his wife. That's a perversion. If he wants to bark up a tree with his time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Well said, Johnny. Thank you very much. Very, very well said. Olga in Byron, Maine, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Olga.
Hi.
Boy,
I've been waiting quite a while.
Well, thank you for waiting. What did you want to talk about?
Yes. Well, I just have a comment up here and about my fellow Americans and especially my fellow Mainers. I'm very disappointed in the outcome of the elections.
Mm-hmm.
They They just reelected Mr. I want to tell Obama to go to hell, Paul LePage.
Oh yeah.
Back in the office.
Yeah.
And
your governor.
I just recently heard the comment on the Social Security rule. Yeah, because I'm an avid Facebooker, and I get all kinds of different postings from all different people up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I get one about the Republicans are making cuts to Social Security, and I heard where they're changing some kind of rules for the disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, because that'll affect my family.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody in your family is on Social Security disability insurance, the rule change that the Republicans just passed may mean that your benefits are going to be cut, or that the way that they calculate COLAs, that's the more likely thing, the whole so-called chain CPI is going to be brought into effect, which is awful.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we should be strengthening Social Security rather than attacking it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Olga, thank you very much for calling, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Alex in Rockville, Maryland, watching Free Speech TV on cable. Hey, Alex, what's up?
How you doing, Tom Harmon?
Good.
I'm just disgusted at the federal government and the corporations, you know, for basically taking America hostage. I mean, I just feel there's nothing we can do. You said get up there, get active. You know, I've seen all kinds of things being tried on, you know, signatures, people protesting. I just don't see us getting anywhere because, you know, apparently it looks like money is king. And
well,
it looks like apparently we don't have enough money to change the politics of America.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating. I mean,
well, Alex, to a certain extent, you're right. And that's the consequence of Supreme Court decisions. But that said, America is changing, and it's changing rapidly as a consequence of people protesting. So, Alex, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Alan Ratner is going to be with us at the Talk Radio News Service in just a second. Stick around. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Harmon here with you. And let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen Ratner is with us, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can help rescue a slave in South Sudan. Hey, Ellen.
Well, I want to start out with what's going on in France. And, of course, 12 people killed, another 10 people injured. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because Reporters Without Borders, of which I am on the board of, is located in Paris, France.
Wow.
And they issued a statement today. They said, this is machine gun violence is the type of violence we witness in Iraq, Somalia, and Pakistan. We don't expect this, basically, in Paris.
Right.
And
right.
Actually, the executive director is going to be in the United States next week, so I'm going to be seeing him then. But as you know, I mean, attacks on journalists has just been increasing all across the world.
Yeah. Was this? Now, these were not really journalists. I mean, this was a set. This was like Mad Magazine.
It was a satire, but it's you would consider
it's still, yeah.
Right.
It's free speech. Yeah,
it is
press,
free speech. It is the press.
Yeah, you're right.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay. So a few other interesting things going on. The White House, of course, issued a statement today saying that France is the oldest democracy. We stand by France. They've been our friends. We're going to help them, et cetera, and that we're also going to protect people around the world who might be in countries. Even Saudi Arabia came out against what happened today.
Yeah, good.
So, yes, that is good. Okay. There's a lot going on in Congress, as you know, and I think that one of my favorite quotes today is that Senator Mitch McConnell said, after so many years of sluggish growth, we're finally starting to see some economic data that can provide a glimmer of hope. The uptick appears to coincide with the biggest political change of the Obama administration's long tenure in Washington, the expectation of a new Republican Congress.
Right. That's why the stock market dropped, 500 points in the last 2 days?
I mean, what planet is the guy on? Okay, he's on a planet McConnell.
Yeah.
Okay, Chuck Schumer today, a senator from New York, he basically said that they have uncovered an Atlanta, New York gun smuggling ring, 153 firearms loaded onto 20 planes from Atlanta to New York because they do not check cleaners, repairers of airplanes, luggage loaders. They only check flight attendants and pilots.
Really?
So here's this big hole. They never checked these people, and they were running a gun smuggling ring out of Atlanta into New York.
And it could just as easily have been,
Something worse. 10 pounds
of C-5 that takes a plane out of the
exactly,
air.
Exactly.
Or C-4 or whatever it is.
Exactly,
here.
Exactly.
Amazing.
So that's interesting. Now, of course, we have yesterday, the two things kind of dovetail. Rand Paul, there was a Jewish Republican event here last night taking a place at a local restaurant. And Rand Paul went to this event. It was actually at the Capitol Grill, a Republican-Jewish coalition. And he put in a bill yesterday, defend Israel by defending Palestine, to defund them because they joined the International Criminal Court.
To defund the Palestinian Authority.
Which, of course, they get some money from the good old USA.
Right.
And what's interesting, as reporters also at the United Nations, where I was on Monday, said that these documents have been, they were asked, the reporters said, well, were these in line with what the Palestinians needed to do to join the International Criminal Court? And the Secretary General's office said, yes, they are. They handed all the paperwork appropriately. Now it is up to the individual countries about whether to recognize them or not, et cetera, individual members of the United Nations. But they did things by the book.
I think the Palestinians are playing this right. They are taking the steps that they can take, you know, without vetoes and things, to become a nation.
Right. Now, the XL pipeline, as you know, the president has threatened to veto it. However, it looks like Mitch McConnell has begun to pick off some people. He is about seven votes. So they're 54 people. They need 60 votes, right?
Right.
It looks like
he needs six Democrats.
He needs six, and it looks like he has seven. At least six. He's got Manchin and five other co-sponsors, and that isn't even other people that might sign on. Donnelly of Indiana, Heitkamp of North Dakota, Warner of Virginia, McCaskill of Montana, Tester of Montana.
Right, these are
McCaskill, Missouri,
this
Tester.
This is basically the Conservadem caucus in the
Senate. Conservadem caucus. That's absolutely correct. As you know, also there has been a move to move the Affordable Care Act now to 40 hours. A lot of people are objecting to that in a major way. But again, some Democrats, some people in Democrats and names are going along with changing the Affordable Care Act from 30 hours to 40 hours, despite Congressional Budget Office, et cetera, saying that it may take up to a million jobs away, because then people will just make people at 39 hours or just get rid of people altogether if they have to pay health care. These
right.
are corporations.
So the frame here is that if you employ somebody, if you're a large company, if you get more than 50 employees and you employ people for more than 30 hours a week, you have to provide them with health insurance because they're considered full time. And the Republicans want to raise that 30 hours a week up to 40 hours a week.
Right. Exactly.
Which will exclude a lot of people from getting free health insurance on the job.
A lot of people. And then people can't afford it.
Right.
Okay. There is a dynamic scoring bill. As you know, this came up yesterday. You've been talking about it. You were talking about it just on the air about what might happen on this. It is the dynamic scoring means that if there's a tax, they can say, well, this is what will mean to the economy five years from now, whatever.
Right.
I know you've been talking about that. It is interesting that it is a House bill right now. It is expected to also be part of the Senate rules.
Here's the rules.
But currently it isn't.
As passed yesterday.
Right.
And this is Jared Polis's amendment to say no dynamic scoring, and they voted that down.
They voted it down, and it was pretty much done on a party line vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
So surprise, there you
surprise.
Have it.
I predicted this last week. I said, you know, you just wait. The first thing that this Congress is going to do is dynamic scoring, something you've probably never even heard of, and it's going to hurt all of us. This is Reaganomics all over again.
A quick thing, Peter DeFazio and others are going against the fast-track authority on this bill for essentially what I call NAFTA light.
Yeah, yeah. I call it SHAFTA. It's the Southern Hemisphere Asian...
Right.
Free Trade Agreement, SHAFTA, NAFTA, CAFTA, SHAFTA. There you go. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
And thanks again, by the way, for educating me about the importance of what you should do if you see sparkles in your eyes.
I
went and got my pupils dilated this morning and got my eyes all checked out. And it seems like I'm okay. So, anyhow, thank you for that.
Okay.
Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. We'll be back. It's coming up on the top of the hour.
listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dan Sisson is on the line. Dan is the author of the new book, The American Revolution of 1800, which I helped edit and has my name on the cover, too. But Dan's the principal author of this book. He's also the distinguished professor of American history and the revolution coming our way at the Tom Hartman University on the banks of the Potomac, and an adjunct faculty member of the Eastern Washington University, where he teaches the history of technology in the engineering department. And we are so pleased to have Eastern Washington University helping deliver Professor Sisson to us. Sir, welcome back.
Hello there, Tom.
Hey, Dan. So Chapter 8 is the final chapter in the book, The American Revolution of 1800. And this is our Tom Hartman book club. We've been going through one chapter at a time every week, and here's the last chapter. And what events occurred in 1800 that made not only Jefferson and Madison but also the Federalist realize that this election of Thomas Jefferson over John Adams and others was actually a revolution as opposed to simply an election?
Well, you have to go back to what we've been talking about now for weeks and weeks, and that is there were no such political parties. There was never a precedent in human history in which an election overturned an administration. And so all of a sudden, we have a tied electoral college between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr at 65 votes apiece. And there's no resolution. Jefferson tries to find Burr, and so does Madison, and he won't respond. And he's rumored to be in North Carolina. Then he's rumored to be in New England. And he will not respond by letter or by any messenger, which would be the best kinds of communications in those days. And so they start to realize that something is afoot. And meanwhile, there's all these rumors that are starting to circulate throughout the country, and especially among the leadership class. And the rumors had to do with things like the Senate was meeting to form a special committee in which they were going to elect a president, which would have been unconstitutional.
Right.
And there were all kinds of rumors about the Federalists willing to prevent an election of a new president because they wanted to have something called an interregnum. And what they were willing to do was to let the authority of John Adams expire on March 4th, 1801, in which there would be no executive to make any order or to execute the laws. And so then they would either appoint a committee or a person like the Chief Justice or a select committee from the Senate to be able to do that.
And the Chief Justice was a Federalist, and the Senate was controlled essentially by Federalists or people.
Absolutely.
So basically what we would call conservatives today. So these conservatives were essentially willing to say, if we can't get a conservative president, if we can't get, you know, who was their candidate? Who were they promoting?
Well, it would depend on who you were seeing. Hamilton, who had been the leader of the Federalists, had been promoting Charles Pinckney.
Mm-hmm.
And when Pinckney came in third in the voting or fourth, he realized the game was up, but he had squandered his leadership ability, and the more extreme Federalists were now beginning to negotiate. I mean, we hear this kind of talk, you know, even today between the Senate and the executive branch, And so basically they were saying, you know, Jefferson, we might be willing to vote for you, but you're going to have to guarantee that all of the Federalist policies are going to be held in place and you're going to keep our friends in office. And
which is kind of what, you know, John Boehner just said, you know, Barack Obama saying that he's going to veto our Keystone XL pipeline bill proves that he's not willing to work with us.
So right on. And so what we're looking at are the preconditions for a situation that could turn pretty ugly in our time, just like it did in 1800. Hmm. And so when we even go further into this, what we find out is that the High Federalists began to say that they were going to vote for Burr. Hamilton was no longer a major player at this point. And their point man was a guy named James Bayard from Delaware, who was respected by everybody. And he was going around talking to all the emissaries from the Republicans, which represented Jefferson's and Madison's viewpoint. And then what we're looking at is that the Republicans decide that they're going to have to respond to this. And so basically they say, we're not going to consent to anything that is not constitutional.
Right. The Republicans, by the way, being the Democratic Republicans at that time, right. What we today call the Democratic Party, and really the progressives or the liberals of the day.
The Party of the People.
Right.
And we must remember that the Federalists were elitist. They were the wealthy.
Right.
They were the ones who controlled everything from the time that the government was founded. And they were in a state of shock by the events that unfolded.
Because Jefferson was not one of them.
That's right. That's exactly right. He resigned, in fact, as Secretary of State so he could go back to Monticello and think about all this.
Right.
And so here we are. The tension keeps mounting, and the meetings are being held everywhere, and the Republicans are saying free men are not going to accept usurpation even for one moment. And so they have this big conference in which one of the major players – he decides that he's going to stop the thing in its tracks. I mean, and all of a sudden you have a unanimity on the part of the Jeffersonians that they have to really seriously do something about this. And so then Jefferson says, well, this is reaching a point where of no return. We can't just make this claim and then go back on it. It's not subject to negotiation. So I'm going to visit the President of the United States and ask him personally, is he willing to jeopardize that there's going to be violence and possibly civil war? So Adams goes to the White House and goes to see his old friend John Adams. And
Jefferson
Adams,
goes to the White House and sees Adams.
Right, yeah. Right. And so he's shocked to find out that Adams is determined to keep the Navy. He wants to keep the tax policies. He wants to keep the financial policies. And he's telling Jefferson, you have to do this or we're not going to do anything about it.
And Jefferson, by the way, at that point in time, was vice president to John Adams, was he not?
That's right.
Yeah,
he sure
okay.
was.
So.
And so then what the events seem to overtake both of the men and the leaders of both parties. All of a sudden, it becomes people begin to realize there's over 100,000 people who have gathered in Washington, D.C. on what is now the Ellipse or the Mall, and they're camped out, you know, and they're angry and they're vociferous.
And relative to today's population, that would be like 5 or 10 million people today.
Well, there was only 5,000 permanent population in Washington, D.C. at this time.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, you realize you've got 20 times the number of people there.
Right.
And they're threatening the lives of congressmen and throwing stones against. They had to clear Republican-dominated the legislature because somebody had threatened, a terrorist attack, like a bomb. They were threatening to shoot people. And so all of a sudden, there was a panic that sort of gripped the air.
Hmm.
And it's not just in Washington, D.C. We also find out that there were 22,000 men that had formed a militia, and the governor of Pennsylvania was leading them on a march toward Washington, D.C. We find out that there's 12,000 people in Virginia who have been stationed, you know, on emergency alert, and they've got a courier horseback going from Washington, D.C. to Richmond every 4 hours to tell them whether they should march on Washington. All the armories in Charleston, South Carolina, and Philadelphia, and New York City have been seized, and the guns and rifles were given out to Jeffersonian supporters. All of a sudden in Baltimore, There is a group that's forming over 10,000 people, and a realization begins to hit everybody that we are now looking at civil war, and it's going to happen any hour if we continue along these lines.
Wow.
And meanwhile, you know, this is how they finally say, well, the revolution is on, and Jefferson calls for an immediate constitutional convention so that they can decide what the future is going to be.
Wow. Okay. And on that cliffhanger, we will be back with Dan Sisson in just a few minutes. Dan Sisson, the author of The American Revolution of 1800, edited by Tom Hartman and available now in bookstores near you. Stick around. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman University Book Club on the air.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The book is The American Revolution of 1800 by Dan Sisson. Dan will be right back. So, Dan, we're on the verge of civil war because the Electoral College vote for president is tied between Jefferson and Burr. Do I have that right?
That's right.
Okay. So who's James Baird, and what role did he play in preventing this civil war?
Well, James Baird turns out to be a very interesting guy, and he is one of the well-respected leaders among the Federalists. He's from Delaware, and he's sort of a caucus leader, and he's a person that everybody seems to have good faith in. He's also a lawyer and a constitutional expert, a kind of, you know, person that we see today who describes himself as a constitutionalist. Mm-hmm. And he has integrity.
So he's sort of like Everett Dirksen, maybe.
I would say that.
Yeah.
You bet.
You know, a conservative who has some integrity.
Yeah. I think that there's a Republican minority leader later on, I can't remember his name right now, but he was a similar kind of guy who everybody would listen to, and
right.
He could bring about some kind of attention and compromise even. And so he became the sort of front man who would negotiate with Jefferson's primary negotiators. And he was the first one who showed any inclination to soften the message that the hardcore Federalists were giving everybody at that time. And he suggested that Jefferson at least accept in principle some continuity of the old Federalist system. Well, Jefferson replied to this that he was elected by the people, and it would be unbecoming to him and to free men for him to go into office making any concessions. And remember, this is the second time that this has occurred. And so Baird goes back, and Baird is trying to make up his mind. The high core Federalists at this point decide that Hamilton's candidate cannot be retrieved, and they hate Jefferson to such a degree that they're willing to vote for Burr. And the problem was that Burr could not be found. Burr would not appear to defend himself or to give his views or to be involved in any kind of
negotiations. Why was that? Was he afraid of – I mean, he ultimately was shot to death by Hamilton. Was he afraid of something
right.
like that?
Well, that's one of the great ironies, but that was in the future. At this point, I think that Burr was a candidate who wanted to be drafted and was willing to become president. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about all this is that in these negotiations, both Jefferson and Madison are constantly looking for a constitutional solution to this problem.
Right.
And Jefferson is on record as telling Baird that he would be willing to accept the position of vice president for the next 4 years, the one that he had just been serving under Adams, if he could preserve the Constitution. And so he's appealing to a guy who is a self-styled constitutionalist and said, it's the Constitution and the Republic that are inseparable. It's the Constitution which protects everybody. And if what I understand my colleagues to be doing is willing to sacrifice the Constitution to put a guy like Burr into office who won't even appear to defend himself or give his views, this is insanity. Mm-hmm. And so he says, I'm going to break with the party, and I'm in a faction, and I'm going to defend the Constitution. So he announces this in a meeting, and he is immediately threatened. And he says, I don't care. I'm willing to sacrifice my career. And
hold that thought right there, Dan. Hold that thought
okay.
right there. We will be right back with Dan Sisson. We're creeping right up on the edge of revolution in 1800. The book, The American Revolution of 1800 by Dan Sisson. Stick around. It's 20 minutes past. Back to the hour. Welcome back. So, 1800, the election is happening. The Aaron Burr and Thomas Jefferson are tied in the number of electoral votes they have. There are militias coming in from around the country. There's 100,000 people in Washington, D.C. throwing stones at members of Congress. And the country is literally on the brink of civil war. And James Baird, who is one of the leaders of the Federalists, one of the conservative leaders, decides this is nuts. You know, we can't have a civil war. Yeah, we've only been a country for a couple of decades. We've got to do something. So where do we go from here, Dan?
Okay, so when you have it's characteristic of a party that if they can give the appearance of unanimity, even despite factions within the party, and this is what we see today, even with factions controlling large portions of the Republican Party, that they're arguing among themselves, and that Baird is the one person who can resolve the problem. I mean, he can desert, and when he deserts and takes Delaware with him, as well as Maryland, he changes the numbers of the electoral votes and gives Jefferson the constitutional majority that he needed, which was 9 votes. And so, it's anticlimactic once this man makes the proper decision, a constitutional decision. But at the same moment, you have to realize that our system is almost geared so that it can bring these factions in competition with one another right up to the very edge of a civil war or a revolution. We see that happen in the Civil War, of course.
Yeah.
This is one of America's blessings, is that we're in the final analysis, when we have to really say we're going to overthrow the Constitution, we come to our senses and we say we can't do this and we have to abide by the rule of law.
Yeah, there
this
you
is
go.
The way I see.
Now,
yeah.
Often when you read history from the Revolutionary era and the first 3 decades thereafter, you hear about party, you hear about faction. But rarely is faction described. I think most people don't know even what the word faction means, or certainly meant back in that day, and what the analogy is to today. What's your understanding of all this?
Well, my belief is that we haven't departed one whit from the politics of the early republic. If we look at our political system today and we see the various groups that make up a political party, and it's on both sides at different times, we can identify some of those groups as factions whose interest is solely in their own concerns about power and not in the interest of a majority of the community. So they're not talking about what they're going to do is good for the nation. What they're talking about is what they're going to do that will advance the power of the political party that they represent. We haven't gotten away from that one bit. And the founders, you know, equated party with faction. And the historians and the political scientists, I believe, have made an artificial distinction between party and faction that doesn't really exist, because I think the founders had a much better take on it, and they were able to discern what the true direction of a party or a faction was in terms of how the people were acting in terms of interests. And we don't make those distinctions anymore. We just blandly talk about, well, the party does this or the party does that. But it doesn't get us into a deeper analysis. And I think the founders were a lot more sophisticated about their understanding of politics. The other thing is, you know, we've been just in the last 5 minutes going through all these militias coming to Washington, the huge crowds, the threatening the lives of congressmen. These are things that are totally absent from the description in any history that you want to think of that's written in our time.
Right.
I mean, the two
Why
best.
Why is that?
I think they're just blind. I think that they would like to believe that America has gone onward and upward throughout its entire history, always to a greater realization or greater achievement. And they don't care what happened. They don't want to muddy the waters or give America
I read McCullough's book on John Adams. And, you know, at the end of that book, there's maybe 40 pages where he's just mercilessly trashing Jefferson. But he never mentions any of this stuff.
He doesn't even mention the Revolution of 1800,
right.
Nor does Meekham. I mean, both of those books are probably the bestsellers. The American public doesn't have any idea about the commitment to revolution that the Jeffersonians had made.
Right.
I mean, it's really sad.
Or that we damn near had a civil war in 1800, and Thomas Jefferson saved the republic.
That's right. And when you look at the people at that time who were the leaders, even in the Federalist Party, I mean, one of the great quotes that I think is marvelous is George Cabot when he says, this is about 3 weeks to a month after Jefferson takes office. He says, this is in New England. He says, we're all tranquil here, as they say in Paris, after a revolution. Adams recognized it as being a change in the sentiments of people. Robert Troup, who was an operative in the Federalist Party, says democracy has made a marvelous revolution in the public mood. Matthew Davis, who was another Federalist operative, I mean, he's saying that the Revolution of 1800, he calls it that, suggests that it was the overthrow of the Federal Party.
Right. And Jefferson, of course, called it that.
Yeah. And even like Fisher Ames, who was probably the most volatile writer of the period, he says, this isn't any little change of a cabinet scene. He says, this is a great moral revolution. And Hamilton himself, I mean, the great architect, you know, of the Washington years and even partly Adams, within 6 months, Hamilton is writing every Federalist and saying, we have to adopt the ways that Jefferson utilized to seize power in this country, meaning
populism.
Yeah, it's populism, but it's also a politics of revolution. Right. And Hamilton is the one who really recognized this. Huh. You know, he was attacking Adams the whole time and totally oblivious, I mean, blinded by his own power and influence to see what was going on. But right. Even he comes around and sees that it's a revolution.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So the American Revolution of 1800 was actually a genuine revolution. We damn near had a civil war. We literally went from becoming a hard right-wing country to being a very progressive liberal democracy.
Absolutely.
With that
that's
election.
Message. Yep. That's
yeah.
The message.
Okay. The book is The American Revolution of 1800. The author, Dan Sisson. We've gone all the way through the book, so I hope it's been useful for you, and I hope you get a copy and you enjoy it. Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely, Tom.
Great talking. It's been great talking with you. It's been great working with you. We'll do it again.
Okay, guys.
Thanks, Dan. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Did you know that an NAACP office was bombed yesterday in Colorado? Anybody using the word terrorism anywhere? Back to your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, the Dow is up 90 points today. See, this is... It's all about the churn. People who, you know, the serious folks on Wall Street, they love it when the market goes down. They love it when the market goes up. They make money no matter what. And you know, with Reagan doing his IRAs and 401ks and, you know, just changing, doing away with pensions, basically. And this new Cromnibus bill that makes it possible for the Republicans to simply say, hey, you thought you had a pension of $1,000 a month. We're going to make it $500. Tough luck. We got to pay the rich people, you know? It's amazing. It's amazing. There was something in the top story in the New York Times. House Republicans change rules on calculating economic impact of bills. See, I told you so. And Eurozone, they're starting to freak out about deflation in the Eurozone. That's a whole other topic we'll talk about another time. Jesse in Miami. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Hey, the dynamic scoring, voodoo economics, you remember the term classless society?
Yes.
I think the best way to deal with voodoo economics is coming up with a moneyless society.
Huh.
The best way to do that is what Bernie talked about as a cooperative system.
Right.
I think the people could catch on to that because classless society is what sold Russia and China to jump straight to socialism, communism, straight from the monarchy.
You're right.
If we could learn from their bad lessons with the state not withering away and have a cooperative system where the people, not no party, which Mr. Sisson and you've been talking about fractions, take over a cooperative, we could learn the lessons from, you know, history and says, okay, the people could buy a classless society after having, you know, aristocratic system.
Right.
And just think of everything now is money, 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 money. Money makes the world go around.
Right.
So
well,
we
Jesse.
Say, okay, we're going to have a cooperative system where we could get where we don't need money at all.
I got it. People are always, though, going to find a medium of exchange, Jesse. If you're making,
look, if you had the same principle that a nuclear family works on, nobody needs money to help each other. If you expand that principle to the human race, I think that's a possibility.
Yeah, you're talking about Aboriginal, Indigenous, tribal societies. You're talking about what are called hospitality societies or potlatch societies, where the way you gain status in a society is by giving stuff away and rather than possessing things. But even those Native American societies had wampum. They had a way of, you know, maintaining, accounting, basically. But I understand your point, and I don't disagree with it. In fact, I would add to it. I would say that for the last, I don't know, a couple thousand years, basically, we have said that the principal way that we're going to convey money to people in our society is by having them work for it. And I think that we are on the edge of the possibility of a revolution in that. And you're seeing the start of that up in Alaska. One of the first thing, you know, the thing that made Sarah Palin so popular in Alaska the year that she ran for vice president was that she took the Alaska Permanent, and Jesse, thank you for the call. She took the Alaska Permanent Fund, this giant pile of cash that the state of Alaska has in fees, basically taxes on oil that's extracted from Alaska. She took that permanent fund and goosed up tremendously to the point that her own family got more than $40,000 from the state of Alaska in 1 year. So everybody in Alaska got, you know, this wad of cash, a couple thousand dollars for every man, woman, and child in the entire state. And then they said, and then whatever you earn is on top of that. And this is called a guaranteed basic income or a guaranteed minimum income. And it's something that was first proposed in the United States as an American invention by a fellow by the name of Thomas Paine. Maybe you've heard of him. He wrote about it in his book, Agrarian Justice. Thank you, Shano. Tom in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
What is Barack Obama going to do to counter what the Republicans are trying to do to food stamps, unemployment benefits, welfare, and Medicare and Medicaid, as well as Social Security? I know what Mitch McConnell wants to do, but what is Obama going to do?
Well, here's the problem, Tom. If Congress just passed laws that cut Social Security or cut food stamps, Obama could veto them. Instead, what they did was they changed the rules of the House of Representatives so that expansions of Social Security cannot happen anymore, so that food stamps cannot be extended anymore, so that Social Security, people on Social Security disability are at risk. So that, you know, I mean, by changing the rules, they prevented the possibility of a veto because the legislation isn't even going to happen that would be vetoed. So we'll see, Tom. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure the White House does. The Republicans may be too clever by half, I hope, or they might have really just pulled off a coup, by changing the rules of the House of Representatives. Tom, thank you for the call. Time will tell. Benjamin in Los Angeles, listening to KPFK. Hey, Benjamin.
Hey, Tom. Good to hear your voice again.
Thank you. Back at you.
You have mentioned a lot about Reaganomics. And I don't want to seem ignorant. I just want to know, where's a great place for me to go to learn all about Reaganomics?
There's a great book written by Will Durst called Tear Down This Myth, M-Y-T-H, Tear Down This Myth. And it outlines basically, it blows holes in all the mythology around the Reagan presidency and lays out exactly what happened. And in that book, Will Bunch does a really good job of defining Reaganomics. Reaganomics was basically, you know, trickle-down economics. It was this theory that if you make the rich richer, that all of society will prosper because the rich will spend that money or the rich will build factories. And the fact of the matter is that the rich people, when they get more money, they tend to save it rather than spend it. So,
okay. Would this have anything to do with Milton Friedman's style of economics?
Oh, yeah. Milton Friedman was the godfather of Reaganomics.
Okay, because I'm reading The Shock Doctrine right now, and that's what Naomi Klein mentions. Happened.
Yeah.
The society, I think it was Chile was the first to.
Yes. Chile was their grand experiment. That was their first grand experiment. Their second grand experiment was Iraq. Paul Bremer talked about how he went over to Iraq, and the reason that they fired all the government employees, They completely disbanded, you know, half of the economy was government-owned industries, government-owned steel mills, government-owned cement factories, where the workers were government employees. They fired everybody. They shut them down and privatized them, put them up for bid. This was a great libertarian experiment of Friedmanism, you know, Reaganomics on steroids, actually. I mean, Reagan didn't go as far as Friedman wanted to. And they tried it in Chile. It was a horrible failure. They were going to try it again in Iraq. And L. Paul Bremer's job was to tear down everything so that out of that, a few billionaires would step in or some of the rich people in Iraq would step in and rebuild the country magically using the principles of the free market. And you can see, you know, take a look at Iraq right now. You can see how well it worked. It was the second brilliant experiment. And Naomi Klein's book, Shock Doctrine, is spot on about that. It's been so long since I read it, I don't know if she uses the phrase Reaganomics, but I use that as shorthand for that whole school of economics. Benjamin, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Dave, in Armstrong Creek, is that Wisconsin?
Yes, it is, Tom.
Hey, Dave, what's up?
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Back at you.
Yeah, I had some, back in 2000, I had symptoms very similar to yours.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it might be a detached retina. Anyways, I went into an ophthalmologist. I was on the road at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me to a major medical center that afternoon, and it turned out to be ocular melanoma, which was...
Yikes.
And, yeah, and anyway, I ended up getting, at the time, it was a pretty radical surgery, and they did save the eye, so...
Wow.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that if you're going to spend a lot of time outdoors, which I was on construction at the time,
right.
Wear good polarized sunglasses for everybody, and especially... people of Scandinavian descent like I am.
Right. Yeah, good point. I mean, melanoma is a serious cancer. That's scary.
I've kept the sight in the eye now for 15 years. So.
That's great.
So
that's great.
Worked.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thanks for sharing your story with us, Dave. It's great to hear from you, and Happy New Year. Tea Party Dave in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Tea Party Dave, how you doing?
Hello, Tom. How are you doing out there?
I am very well, thank you. What's on your mind?
What I wanted to ask was just to quote Ronald Reagan. Again, it's not that liberals don't know anything. It's just that so much of what they know is wrong. So I was actually I was amused there for a moment when you brought up Sarah Palin as governor returning money that was taxed back to the people instead of
that money was not taxed from the people. It was taxed from the oil companies.
Right, and giving it back to the people of the state.
Right.
I applaud that. I absolutely applaud that. I wish all the states would do that.
Right. Why don't we? So you agree with me that the mineral wealth under the ground is the property of the state, not whoever happens to own that land, and therefore when that mineral wealth is extracted, the state can take a piece of that and distribute that to everybody in the state, which is what Alaska
does.
That's
not exactly what I meant. When the state taxes everything that they do continuously, that they should return it to the people they taxed, the citizens, instead of spending it on government.
So then what you're saying, Tea Party Dave, is that when Sarah Palin was governor, instead of giving $40,000 to her own family and pretty much every other family that had six or seven people in it, that she instead should have given that $40,000 to BP?
No.
That's where it came from.
Well, I know what you're saying, but hopefully here, I didn't want to get off on this subject as much as I wanted to mention. What you mentioned, the Republican talking points and those right-wing, what you call them, dog whistle.
Right.
What are they?
Benghazi, Fast and Furious, IRS, all these so-called scandals, the things that, thanks for the call, Dave. The things that Daryl Issa is all.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The thing that Daryl Issa has his panties in the wad about all, you know, continuously. That stuff. We'll be back. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Steve watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network in North Troy, Vermont, which is about as far north as you can get. How you doing, Steve?
Greetings from the home of Northern Lights, Tom.
Thank you.
There's another great book about the revolution of 1800. It's called The American Aurora by a guy named Rosenfeld. It came out about 15 years ago.
Okay.
That's where it's all like newspaper clippings from the time, from Benny Bache's newspaper and stuff.
Oh, wow. Is it pronounced Bache? I always pronounced it Bach. B-A-C-H-E was Benjamin Franklin Bach was Ben Franklin's grandson, and he was the guy that that John Adams threw in prison as soon as he passed the Alien Sedition Act in 1798.
Yeah, tomato, tomato. Anyways, yeah. I tried to call yesterday about that thing you had on the news about the pesticides in food.
Uh-huh.
We had a thing up here a couple of years ago with a solid waste district. They compost. They sell their own compost from all the Burlington area.
Right.
And it started killing gardens. It started killing all these people's vegetable gardens. So they started testing the stuff, and they found it was perchlorid or perchloram, which is the same kind of herbicide, pesticide, whatever.
Right.
And it had come through horses. It had gone through the horses, through the grain, and into the compost, and it was still so powerful it killed everybody's gardens.
Whoa.
So they had to reimburse everybody. So anyways, they kept testing for this stuff, Tom, and where do you think they found the highest levels afterwards after they de-seed the horse manure? The highest levels they found was coming in from pizza crust that was composted from the surrounding schools.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
And I could not believe it. I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're poisoning the kids.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is, I mean, we
anything.
Yeah, we had a guest on last week who was saying we're going to see autism rates.
I can't hear you, Tom. If you're there, I guess I'm going to have to.
Okay, Steve, thank you very much. Thanks for the call. Occasionally our phones get a little flaky. I'm sorry you can't hear me, but and it's funny. It seems to happen close to three. But yeah, we had a guest on earlier in the week who was saying that by 2030, I think, or 2035. That half of the kids being born right now will be autistic because of all these poisons that are in our food supply and in our lives. I mean, you know, you could look at thimerosal in the vaccines. Bobby Kennedy has written a great book about that. But, you know, she was pointing to glyphosate, also known as Roundup, and other chemicals in the food supply, pesticides, herbicides, things like this that are, you know, and pesticides in particular, because most pesticides are neurotoxins. They disrupt insects. They kill insects by disrupting their nervous systems. And guess who has a nervous system? We do. So anyway, Kenneth in Blythewood, South Carolina. Hey, Kenneth, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to say the first thing that Republicans did when they became in charge, they took the vote or want to take the vote on Keystone.
Right.
Now, with gas, it's $2 a gallon. That can't be the priority. The priority must be the roads, bridges, the water, and the air.
I agree, and that's what Bernie Sanders is saying.
Yeah, they're telling you that our priority is going to be giving welfare to the oil companies and the rest of the Fortune 500.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Kenneth, very, very well said. Thank you for the call. 10 minutes before the hour, we'll be right back. Back 10 minutes before the hour, Shana and I were just talking about the American Aurora. Now, American history seems to be basically Federalist conservative history. It's been hijacked by conservatives, literally for 200 years. And I think Dan Sisson with the American Revolution of 1800 did a great job of saying there's more to the story. And Jefferson, you read Jefferson's writings. In fact, I wrote about this in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? Jefferson used to go on these rants about David Hume, who was the most famous historian of the era from England, Hume's Histories of England. And Jefferson was like, this isn't history. This is propaganda of by and for rich people. Amazing. Amazing. Pat in Beloit, Wisconsin. Hey, Pat, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hey, Tom. A quick note on a couple things. I want to talk about Enbridge Line 61 because, and I guess you've talked some, but I am really scared for our state. We have a beautiful state, and so is Illinois, and that line's going to have 40% more tar sands going through it by the time they change this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already traveling through the state, but now it's going to be pressuring more, and Enbridge is such a safe company. That's why they are still cleaning up in Kalamazoo.
Right.
So you know, I'm hoping to get the publicity out so more people get involved and see what's happening, because it's not on the news.
Yeah.
But I also want to touch on, you've brought up a couple things. Number one, so like when they...
Pick one, Pat, because I've got a whole bunch of other people who want to have something to say. Just pick one.
When they change the rules, okay, it has to go to the Senate also. Can it be filibustered? Should we be calling Bernie and...
No. The House rules are determined by the House. This is in the Constitution. Senate rules are determined by the Senate. Each body rules itself. Each body creates its own rules, and it's done by majority vote. It doesn't require a supermajority, and it can't be filibustered. So this is life for the next 2 years, unless the Republicans decide to change their own rules, and they're the ones who have the power to do it. And this is really, really, really sneaky stuff. Pat, thank you for the call. Margie in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Hey, Margie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk a little bit about the other victim in Ohio with the teen committed suicide.
Right.
And that is the truck driver.
You're right.
Nobody is talking.
That truck driver is going to have to live with that for the rest of his or her life.
And it's this is a driver's worst nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And not only does he have to live with the emotional consequences for the rest of his life, he has to deal with the legal ramifications. This will go, because of the way that the federal rules are set up, it will go on his record for the rest of his life as a fatal accident.
Wow.
And it will not say that it was not his fault. On those records, it does not include causation.
That's unfortunate.
It just says he was involved in a fatal accident. Not only that, his carrier, it goes on the carrier record, the carrier's CSA record. That score, that crash fatality score, is open to public record.
Right.
Shippers, receivers, and insurance companies can look at those.
Right.
That carrier, it could actually put the carrier out of business.
Wow.
I hope that doesn't happen. But I ask, while I grieve for the teen who committed suicide, I ask that you also keep your thoughts and your prayers with the driver.
You got it. Margie, thank you. Thank you for educating us all about that. I appreciate the call. Vi in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Vi, what's up?
Hey, I just had a question on the congressional rule change.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple friends that are on, they're disabled and they're in nursing homes.
Right.
And that's being paid for by Medicaid. Well, is that part of the money that could run out? And if so, what happens to people that are in nursing homes that just simply can't take care of themselves?
I don't know the answer to the question, Vi. A lot of the consequences of these rule changes are, including the unintended consequences, are things that we don't really know yet. And over the next couple of days, one of the things I want to do today is Wednesday, maybe by Friday. Certainly Bernie can talk about this on Friday, but I want to get a member of the House of Representatives on who is familiar with the House rules to give us a good, thorough overview of this. And it's going to take a few days for the Democrats and their lawyers to go through these new rules, which the Republicans basically, you know, shoved into place, into law yesterday, or into the rules, and determine exactly what it's going to mean when particular types of legislation happen, or when particular situations happen, like the Social Security Disability Fund running out of money. And is this language broad enough that it can impact Medicare as well as Social Security, those kind of things? I don't know the answer to that, but I hope to by the end of the week. So stay tuned. Thank you for the call. Excellent question. Tony in Mayville, Wisconsin. Hey, Tony. Dynamic scoring?
Yeah, hi. Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
Just fine.
Yeah, Tom, a big fan of yours. My wife and I listen to you every day. I have not a question, but an opinion on this dynamic scoring.
Okay.
The Republicans are doing this. They know that it's going to substantially raise the national debt, and Barack Obama will get blamed for it.
Yep.
Number one. And number two, because the Democrats in office, when they raise this national debt, they're hoping that it'll help them in the 2016 election.
You're absolutely right, Tony. This is all political. This is all political. I doubt there are even Republicans who believe in Reaganomics anymore. There is no empirical evidence for it. And if you look at what happened in Kansas over the last couple of years when Sam Brownback tried this, where he slashed taxes on rich people, including the Koch brothers who live there, When you look at what happened in Kansas, you see that, you know, it's crazy. It's just craziness. Tony, thanks for the call. This dynamic scoring thing, it's I'm astonished that a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I was on this program ranting, saying, look out, this is coming. This is going to be the number one thing. This is going to be the first thing they're doing. The Republican Party is all about the billionaires. They're all about the rich people who fund their elections, who buy the ads, who put them into office, who fly them around the world with their fancy schmancy things, who run the American Legislative Exchange Council and what. All this stuff, the Republican Party is about the billionaires, and they're going to figure out a way to cut taxes for the billionaires. And the way they're going to do it is the same way Reagan did it, with so-called dynamic scoring. Voodoo, what George Herbert Walker Bush correctly called voodoo economics. Thanks so much for being with us these 3 hours today. We will see you tomorrow, same time, same place. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you participating. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.